since we're very transparent with our listeners, you know, got something to share. Big thing happened this weekend. Mike Novogratz went to prison.
Tuitions have increased twice as fast as inflation. General inflation over the last 30 years, and that is largely because of this debt hamster wheel that
it's like
created.
The crack dealer giving the crack addict money to buy the crack, and then saying, oh, the price is higher. Oh, sure. I'll lend you more money.
Welcome back. Shit, what episode is this?
Shit.
This is episode...
What podcast is this?
Wolfpack number 7.
Wolfpack number 7. Is it number 7?
I got no idea.
Well, anyway, welcome back to Business Untitled. Like, subscribe, and you know we take questions now. Share your questions under the comments and share this podcast with somebody because it's cool as fuck. Mike has been saying since day one when we started, when Dave was giving out his ounce of gold to everyone, Mike was saying, take this thing, it's gonna go to $4,000, buy it. And now we're podcast maybe 26, 27, and gold is up 22%. You were right. Why is that?
Yeah, a clock's right at least twice a day. listen, gold is going higher. It's breaking out to all-time highs. Silver is on a tear, mostly because the government's spending too much money. Period, end of story. And the world is now understanding governments across the world are spending too much money. We have an age of populism, and in populist governments, no one wants to take the tough medicine.
Right.
And we're talking about this later on with student debt. Governments are spending too much money, and the market sense it. And so gold, Bitcoin, silver, copper, commodities, real estate, stocks, they're all going up.
Why copper, though?
Well, copper's got its own story. I like copper a lot. It's one of my biggest longs. Copper's an industrial metal. It's used in lots of things, in housing, in construction, in cars, in data centers. And so we've had this giant data center boom, which is going to be a huge user of copper. But more importantly, China, which everyone had written off as dead, has finally gotten its act together and is putting a huge amount of government money to try to support their economy. And we're seeing a turn in China. And so pessimism probably got too extreme in China. I'm not a long-term bull in China because I don't like dictatorships. But in the short run, China looks pretty constructive. And so when markets were all one direction and China shifts, you're going to see China copper demand picking back up. And so you got a lot of demand and you have the same story of debasing currencies. And so,
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, so I was just going to say, to summarize that, you got two distinct things going on at one time. You got inflation, right, of assets relative to dollars. So that's the same story as gold, silver, copper, a lot of commodities. At the same time, you got supply a bit fixed, not as fixed as gold, but but demand is surging and supply can't catch up quickly enough because of this Chinese economy and the data centers.
Okay. And the classic commodity cycle is when prices go up, people invest more in digging out more copper from the ground.
Right.
And then that brings the prices back down. But so commodities have these amazing cycles because when you see prices, everyone wants to invest. And they're not short cycles, right? You can't invest today and start digging out copper tomorrow. These are long cycle investments. And
Yeah, like it takes you, if you wanted to today start to improve or increase your copper production, it'd take you a year, right?
More, right?
You have to get these systems in place, buy another machine, et cetera. So that's the story on copper.
I thought China was just in a place where they were going to have this huge real estate collapse, and are they not there anymore?
Everybody told that story.
Yeah.
It was happening. You see it happening. It's still happening, but it finally gets priced in the markets.
Yeah.
When everybody believes the same thing, it's in the price. And the government is reacting, right, both with interest rates and fiscal stimulus. And so the Chinese are doing what everyone else is doing. Let's print more money. Let's get ourselves out of this mess.
What they're also doing, I think, now they've had about 20 of their top developers go bankrupt or restructure. Really, like, it's a bloodbath over there. And what I understand they're doing is also taking back some of that housing and essentially socializing it, right? So they're trying to put it back into productive use by, like, basically wiping out the ownership and then creating a social housing program to take some of that off the market.
Dave, did you see this thing in Maryland, Baltimore, where they're selling all these, I think it's something like 15,000 to 20,000 buildings they're selling for $1 each?
Yeah.
It's like been going viral. I want to talk about things that's been going viral a little bit. Mm. And the government are even like, they're giving like incentives. If you buy it, you could probably have like $50,000 to reinvest in it because the neighborhood's just been so like, you know, messed up because, and they want to change the community, right?
Yeah.
So they're selling all these buildings for $1 each. Literally, you email them, and I think at one point they did something like that in the Bronx, right? I don't know if it was
probably a long time ago.
They younger, but I heard about it.
Yeah, they did it in Detroit at one point in time as well, for sure.
So can that work?
I think the reason the cities do that, right, they want to get these back into productive use on the tax rolls. So if they're taking these back, they're sitting on the cities, nobody's paying taxes on them. Yeah. So it hurts the municipal budget. Everybody else's taxes go up to compensate. So what they're trying to do is get these things back on the tax rolls. So and provide investment into the community and at the same time get safer, better neighborhoods grounded with people. So I think it's a good government policy because it's really the only option they have. And I think as the investor, you need to just be selective and picky. There's going to be some buildings that are probably garbage and you can't bring them back. And there might be other ones that, you know, you put $20,000 or $50,000 back in there and you get some good housing.
So here's the thing, right? For like a guy from the inner city in Baltimore, even here in New York, is it worth like running to Baltimore and buying these properties and sitting on them as an ambitious kid who want to get into real estate? Is it like what would be your advice to somebody who could actually afford?
It's a little unfair question because we haven't done the homework on Baltimore. We can give you a generic
answer. I would
look at it. I would look at rents in that submarket, and I would say, okay, if I get this for $1, how much do I have to put in here to make it livable? If I do, will that rent give me a fair or better than fair return on that investment? And then it could be a really, you know, I'm sure there's great programs. It's like one of those opportunities where it could be a really good way to get into real estate, but you got to be careful. It's got to be places where you got to believe
that something turns the psychology, the spirit, the economics of that neighborhood around, right? Yeah. Detroit had a renaissance.
Yeah, a mini renaissance. Of sorts. And I think if you look at Detroit as a model, there was a time when Detroit, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, was trading so cheap that anything you bought at that point in time was going to be worth more later. It was so cheap. And that's probably where Baltimore is. I haven't looked at it. But what's going to happen, you're not going to make 20x on that, but you might make 2 or 3, because what's going to happen is capital's going to go in. It's going to pick that market up a little bit and put it back into more normal returns. And that's what happened with Detroit. There was like a few years where there was, anything you picked up, you made money. And then after that, it was like every other market. Yeah, you know, you had to work for it.
Yeah, very few free lunches.
But it could be a good opportunity, though, really. You know, it's something where there's a bunch of incentives around you. If you know that market, you know Baltimore, and you want to take a little risk and put your sweat equity into it, it could be something.
All right, we got to get that interruption jar going for Mike again.
I haven't interrupted once.
What? Yeah, interrupted
right.
Him.
He's all right. He's.
That was not an interruption. I'm not like with the referee out here.
All right. What's next?
Mike, what's next?
What do we have? Well, we're talking about student loans.
Let's talk about student loans. Yeah. All right. Well, so I'll frame that. This past week or, you know, something like that, the president announced that he was again coming at this student loan cancellation situation. As you recall, 6 months ago, a year ago, I don't remember when, he tried to like sneak it through with about $400 billion in cancellations. It was enormous, problematic. Supreme Court overruled it. Baseline, Congress is supposed to approve spending in this country. There are limited, very limited times when the president is allowed to do it by executive order. Yeah. But that's gotten really crazy lately. So this time he comes back with a more limited scope. It's about $7 billion. And we want to talk about that a little bit. Just contextually, student loans are something that started back in the 50s after Sputnik, and we wanted technological advancement. We wanted to train a lot of scientists at that point in time. Under Johnson, right, with civil rights and all this, he put like a direct lending program in. Nixon then created what was called Ginnie Mae, the government insured, I forget what it stands for, but basically for student loans.
Sally Mae.
It was the student loan.
Oh, everybody owes Sally Mae money.
Yeah,
so, Listen, right? The question I got, why did student loans, why did America, like, how did student loans become such a big business? Why did America, you know, I didn't go to college, you guys did, but why did that become like, is it real? Do you have to go to college to make it? I don't think so. But when did America get to that part of you, like you have to go to college to become successful?
So this is a great—
Is that a thing?
It's a great question. Listen, when I remember when I was in elementary school, I read that only 10% of Brits went to college. I was shocked.
Wow.
And America was like 30% of the time. And somewhere between the 80s and 90s and the early noughts, I remember, it became almost religion to get ahead in this country. You got to go to college, work hard, go to college. First college grad of my family. You hear that story. It's an amazing— it's part of the American dream. Mm-hmm. And so politicians, for good reason, said, let's make it more affordable for people to go to college. Now, when Dave and I were, you know, in the 1980s, University of Virginia as a state resident, between room and board and tuition, was about $4,500. So affordable. California colleges were almost all paid for, the state colleges. The private universities cost a lot more, right? So Princeton or Harvard cost a lot more. But the state colleges, which were some great schools, were very affordable. As budgets went up, harder and harder, this tuition went up. And so people said, hey, we'll just lend kids the money. And again, in the 80s, the government would max lend you $2,500 a year. That's the most you could borrow. And so you couldn't go that in debt. And it was subsidized debt. It was low interest rate. That changed, and they said, well, we'll lend you as almost as much as you want.
Because they wanted everyone to go to college.
Because they wanted to go to college. So now you have this scenario where, in some ways, Big Brother, right, the establishment is telling working-class families, middle-class families, wealthy families, if your kid doesn't go to college, they'll never succeed, i.e. they will die. You better get them into college. Community college, any college. Oh, and it's expensive, we'll lend you the money.
Yeah.
And what's really terrible about this is student loan debt is the only debt that, if you declare bankruptcy, doesn't go away.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think when they were creating the program, to be fair, right, think about Sputnik, right? That was the Russian satellite went up. Everyone's free. They were doing it not only to help individuals with what Mike just talked about, but also to, like, educate people in this. It's an investment in a resource, right? In their mind, they're saying, okay, we're going to make our people smarter because they're going to build better companies, right? That then turned into this education industrial complex where they just kept pouring money into this on kids that didn't understand the credit risks of it, ballooning this debt. And guess what that did? Made universities raise their prices. They're like, oh shit, there's all this financing out here. So when you look at tuitions, and I'll let you, it's tuitions have increased twice as fast as
inflation.
General inflation over the last 30 years, and that is largely because of this debt hamster wheel that
we created. It's like the crack dealer giving the crack addict money to buy the crack, and then saying, oh, the price is higher. Oh, so I'll lend you more money.
That's what I'm saying, and that was my next question, right? Do you think at some point, like prisons, like that example you just said, you think at some point this became like such a big business that we just, not us, but they just marketed it like you have to go to college. Like, remember that you had
how
to
many
drink
colleges,
milk
this is a crazy
or you
question.
Would die?
How many colleges do you think America has?
No
I think
clue.
You've told me this. It's like 4,000. Let's
take a guess.
4,000.
Like 4,400 colleges in America.
That's crazy.
I remember I was looking, what's the 150th best college? It was OSU, which is a good school. It's a fine state university. Yeah. We have a lot of friends, OSU Cowboys. Shout out John Smith. Like, it's a fine college. You'd be fine if your kids went there. But it ain't Harvard.
Yeah.
Right? That's 150. Like, what's number 3,800? Right?
Yeah.
So we've got this giant tail of colleges all trying to make a living.
Yeah.
And they're trying to, hey, come, we'll lend you the money. And so you've got kids graduating with degrees that aren't worth a lot.
Yeah.
And the college isn't on the hook for it. The government is. And the kid is actually on the hook for it.
Yeah.
And so the whole system needs to change. I'm for restructuring student loans. And I know a lot of the Republican friends are saying, oh, bullshit, the guy took the loan, he's got to pay it back. I'm for student loan relief, but only and only if we restructure the whole program. I would make student loans illegal.
Yeah.
Literally. And then you'd see the price of college go down. You'd have colleges go from 19 deans to 9 deans.
Yeah.
Right? We have all this bureaucracy in these colleges because it's as Dave called it, it's the educational industrial complex.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, I don't have a problem if something's done, right, if it was considered predatory, but I do think it should go through proper channels, number one. I think it should be a Congress, you know, proper law passed, not just like
this feels like vote buying.
And it just feels like vote buying. Election year, bam, here's $8 billion. I'm going to, you know, pay off loans. And, you know, you could make that same argument with credit cards. You could make it with mortgages. I mean, we had the whole subprime crisis. There's a lot of places that goes if you're not careful with it.
What's so pernicious about student loans this is predatory lending that you can't get out of because there's no bankruptcy. Even in credit cards, you say, I give up. I screwed up.
Yeah.
I'll go bankrupt. I'll restart my life.
Yeah.
So you got, I mean, when Robert
Smith. Law that you can't, bankruptcy does not count for college loans.
Yeah, I don't.
I think that probably.
We should look into that.
I think that was probably when Ginny.
Sally
Mae was invented. They put it in an independent
agency.
Everyone
hated Sally Mae in the hood, by the way.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Because everyone owned
it. Sally Mae. We won't let 18-year-olds drink booze. They're not responsible enough to have a sip of booze, but they can borrow $80,000 with their uneducated brain and put themselves in $80,000 of debt.
Yeah.
As an 18-year-old who's not wise enough to decide if they want to have a frickin' sip of alcohol, it's bullshit.
What they would have, I'll tell you why they probably would have done it, because at the time that student loans were considered not such a safe investment, they were trying to get a lower interest rate. This is what would have happened, right? And they would have said, okay, if you lend into this program, right, because somebody's got to give the money to the students, so there's somebody on the other end of that transaction, they're not allowed to just wipe it out when they're 23 years old. Because if you think about it, a student would just be like, oh, screw it, I just got out of college. Let me just file bankruptcy, clear all my loans, right? And now I'm good, right? So that was the mentality.
Yeah,
there's always an action and a reaction.
But beneficiaries of this have not been the kids. They've been these universities.
Yes.
And many of them, not great universities, that haven't had performance. And so there's a lot of talk about making the universities – at least eat some of the loss.
Yeah, they should.
If you're going to educate a kid and he comes out and he makes less money than a kid that didn't go to college, like why is he borrowing money? And there's not enough transparency around this. There is marketing. You go on the internet, it's all these online it's shocking. Two of the top five borrowing colleges are online universities, right?
And,
wow. Liberty College, which used to be Liberty Baptist.
Is it a good college? Is it in the top 1,000?
Let me tell you, the CEO of Liberty Baptist College, right, Jerry Falwell Jr., had to resign because they got the videos of him having sex with the pool boy and his wife I'm not making this up.
He's not making it up.
I'm
it's
not
just
making it up. And,
slightly
and
off topic.
For you to go to that college in person, you have to sign a pledge of abstinence, no sex. Right? You're not allowed to have sex there, but I mean, it's like, so this was this Christian Baptist college that said, hey, let's go online and bring in all these Christians. It's the number one attended university in America right now. Over 100,000 students go to Liberty College, and they're the largest or top five large borrower of student loans.
Yeah.
And so you're like, this just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but there's a lot of good colleges that were in there too.
I agree.
Okay.
USC,
and
Penn
but
State.
Also what I'm going to say about that is, but again, they're incentivized to just continue to feed this system, because what does it amount to? More money into those colleges, right? So they're just like hiring more people, more fat. There is no system in this country that is more like obtuse, more opaque, I would say, than the big universities. You don't know how they're controlled, where the money's being spent, right? It's, you know, it's this board of directors that, and you know,
and
just piles into.
And you've seen fat in these places.
Yeah.
So places like Princeton, Harvard, you know, which get alumni money that went up because asset prices went up. Right? So they don't have as much of the student loan problem. Actually, no one who goes to have to take student loans because they're so rich. But the wealthier places get, they hire the next dean and the next dean. And so the ratio of students to admin at these universities has shrunk.
Yeah.
Right. So there's more and more admin.
Yeah.
And so it's why these universities keep costing more.
Yeah. It's all you have to know is that the price of tuition has gone up twice the price of inflation over the last 30 years, because there's no other good reason for it except that there's just too much debt in that system and it's inflating it.
So here's the big question, right? Do you actually think that before it turned into big business, do you think this is a factual that you needed a college education to be successful in life, period?
Factually, college grads make a lot more than non-college grads.
Yeah.
So you would say yes. There are some schools I think are wildly worth going to and some schools that I think are a waste. I believe as a country, we should strive for the fact that every 18 to 22-year-old gets 4 years to figure out who they're going to be in life. And if you're at the right place and you have the and it's afforded to you, college is an amazing experience. You might study philosophy and say, I don't want to be a philosopher. I want to be an engineer. How many 18-year-olds know exactly what they want to be in life? And so it's such a luxury. It's such a privilege to go to a college where you get to pick and choose classes, where it's paid for, where you actually get to mature as a where you get to socially meet people and decide, you know, am I straight or am I gay? A lot of times it's the first time you're out of your house, right? Yeah. Your parents might have been strict. How do I figure out who I am? And so for the kids that get to go to a university and a good university, it's an amazing gift. Yeah. And I don't want that to be lost on this idea of, oh, you don't need college anyway. You know, the Peter Thiel philosophy of, like, because there are plenty of kids that have, I mean, Mark Zuckerberg, I met a kid recently. He said, I'm one of 79 Harvard dropouts that have started a company in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you don't need it, but it's a privilege.
Yeah. No, it's for sure. And probably the number of colleges should be thinned out, right? So there's higher quality in it. And it's also a little bit self-selecting in that if you're a more ambitious, smarter person with, you know, you're more likely to pursue that, right? So when you're looking at, like, income of college graduates versus non-college graduates, there's a little bit of, like, selection bias in a sense. But even Peter Thiel's, Peter Thiel did this thing where elect not to go to college. He does this little competition. He pays you $100,000 to go start a company, to not go to college. And I think 8 or 10 of them become unicorns, like over billion-dollar companies.
It's so crazy because I have like I don't really know what my view is on it, honestly, because I didn't even finish high school, right? I clearly didn't go to college. But altogether in all my businesses, I don't know, I probably have well over 100 employees, right? And everybody that I have there went to college. And I'm always like, how did I end up like running these things and I didn't go to college? But I'm always like, damn, I wish I went to college because
it's a privilege.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm very conflicted with it, right?
Because on
one end, I'm like, I'm a little bit successful. Everybody that works for me went to college, some of them really good colleges. I didn't go to college, but I'm always like, man, I wish I went to college because I feel like I would have more education and I would know maybe things that this person know that I had to hide. Not saying I don't want to hire them because they're adding tremendous value to me, but I'm always like, it makes me a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Insecure in a weird way, like for real. That I wonder where my mind would be, right? I have these big ideas. I know how to execute them. I know how to pick the right people. Like, but if I did finish high school, if I did go to college, would I be myself or would I be like a better version of myself, right? Because I listen to you guys talk and you guys, you know, from day one, I'm always like, I've learned, I think this has been my college for the last 6 years, right? Yeah. Like, I learned some stuff about finance, right? I learned some stuff about development. I know a little bit about macro. Like I was sitting with a guy a couple of weeks ago and he was like, man, you're like a macro guy. How do you know all this shit? And I'm like, am I? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, I guess from being around Mike. So I'm like, you know, you pick up things, right?
Yeah.
This has been my college for the last 6 years. And I'm just like, I don't know what the answer to that is.
It's also time. Like, the wonderful thing about college is it gives you time. to think about things, and you're not under stress because, again, like, you know, I worked through college. I was a waiter at the local restaurant. I delivered pizzas. I let people in who got locked out. Small jobs. I probably worked 8 hours a week, so not 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
There are plenty of kids that work almost 40 hours a week to get themselves through college. We need to go to a country where if you go to a state college, you maybe have to work 8 hours a week, 10 hours a week, but you don't have to kill yourself.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it was. We need to get back there. Right now, college is unaffordable to a ton of people.
Yeah.
Or they take a ton of debt out. Even the HBCUs, it's interesting, right? Because the historical black colleges, like, a lot of black families want to send their kid there to get the black experience. They end up with so much more debt because the HBCUs don't have the big endowments.
Yeah.
And so I remember when Robert Smith paid all of Morehouse's
graduating class.
That was
graduating
dope.
Class.
Yeah.
I was doing the math and I was like, wait a minute. The average graduate at that school is graduating with $80,000 in debt.
Yeah.
Think about that. You're a 22-year-old kid. You had $80,000 of debt that you can't get rid of. And it wasn't debt at 2%, right?
I got to give this shout out, HBCUs. Shout out to Hampton University. My daughter goes there. HU, the real HU. It's a good college.
Yeah. And the thing about colleges, too, look, it's a gift.
And she turned down Howard.
It's a gift. It's also, life is a learning, is a constant, continual learning process, right? So you can go to college, not really apply yourself. And, you know, what you're doing now in terms of, like, constantly learning, constantly being curious, that's really the key to it anyway. Whether you went to college, went to a great college,
didn't go to a great college.
Yeah, a lot of people waste their time. I mean, I could make an argument that you should go to college, that colleges should be 3 years at this point in time with technology, knowing what really goes on and how much, like, honestly, time wasting goes on in those 4 years, right? You could make either side of that argument, but I think you could, like, put more people through that experience just by taking college, shortening it to 3 years. I haven't thought through it deeply, but I know there's a lot of classes and a lot of time during college that you're just like, you know, fucking off.
I guess my thing be like, would I have the same mindset I have now if I had, like, a formal education in a bad way? Like, when I say a bad way, meaning I wouldn't be as creative or as curious, because a big part of my curiosity, maybe, right? But a big part of my curiosity is because from the 10th grade to now, I'm just trying to learn. So if I got put on a path to become a doctor or become whatever, would I have just learned? I don't know. I'm literally just like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, you don't
I
know.
Think about that a lot.
I think.
Because you went to school to be a lawyer, right?
I ended up going to law school.
You went to law school.
Yeah,
you became a lawyer for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I was a history major in college. But
oh, really?
But then I went to law school.
And
yeah.
did law for what? 2 years?
Yeah, two or three years.
And
three
decided
years.
It wasn't for you.
Right. Yeah, I loved law school. I just didn't love being a lawyer.
So if you weren't born rich, right? How much would you have been in debt for that decision that you decided later on not to do? A lot.
Probably. Yeah.
Law school was probably 20 grand a year back then, 25 grand a year.
Yeah.
Now it's probably 100 grand a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the really elite universities now are roughly 75 to 100 grand a year.
Yeah.
But, you know, like NYU med school, every student who goes there is paid for.
Yeah.
So some of these schools have such big endowments and such generous alumni.
Wait, what do you mean every student?
You get into NYU med school, and now it's becoming the best med school in the world. So, because everyone wants to graduate with no medical school debt. So if you get an NYU med school, and this is Ken Langone, Stan Druckenmiller, really Ken Langone who drove it. Druckenmiller has been his right-hand man and a big active board. You get into NYU med school, it's paid for.
Oh, wow.
So you graduate
as
a doctor with no law. The classic story, and I have a college roommate who went to med school late. He's 59 years old. He still has medical debt from med school. Because med school was wildly expensive, and you know, you already had college debt. Now you're taking on medical school debt. Then
being a doctor is not nearly as lucrative as it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, because the healthcare, basically the system has ground them into like commoditized chop meat at the end of the day.
We met this girl, I won't mention her name, but we met this girl in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
She matched at some hospital, whatever, but I remember her telling me that she's going to have to be a doctor for 8 years before she could even start getting out of debt.
Yeah.
That's actually crazy.
It's usually much more longer than 8. Yeah. Much
but no, before she can start right. to yeah. paying down debt. Yeah. So she's probably going to be in debt for 15 years, yeah. 20 years.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Let's move on. Next
let's move on from this. But what I do want to just say in closing is, it's also a little bit indicative of this, like, free lunch.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just like, pay this. But there's a cost to all these things. So if we're paying $8 billion of student debt off, that's $8 billion that isn't being invested somewhere else or is being inflated into the money supply.
And it's a lot more than $8 billion. This is like the fifth bite at the apple by yeah. just taking, sneaking around the
yeah, little one. So, you know, it's I think it's just important to realize that these things have consequences. So you're making a decision like, okay, we preference this over paying down our interest payment or spending more on city revitalization. You know, whatever you want to say, right? That's what's going on with this.
What really has put our country in peril, and we are in peril, make no yeah. bones about it, was that we went probably in the early 2000s with the first, you know, Gulf War, where traditionally we'd go to war and it was expensive. So you'd raise war bonds, you'd raise taxes, you'd do something to end up having to pay for war. But because we were in this, at this point, deflationary world and globalization was pushing down inflation, and first George Bush and then Obama, they didn't want people to feel the pain. They just spent the money and didn't change the budget, and yeah. it was just additional spending. And it didn't come back to bite us for a while because we were in this deflationary
right.
boom.
Yep.
And budget deficits started going up, and then all of a sudden, I've told the story before, you got Trump who wanted to spend more money, and then COVID, and then Biden. And now
it's a crisis.
Our debt is, we're in a crisis.
Yeah.
And we got used to no consequences.
Yeah.
What you're supposed to do, as Dave just said it, you want to spend more on student loan forgiveness, which I think is a good thing. You're taking it from the military, or you're taking it from someone else, or you're having less bureaucracy, or you're cutting something. Like, you just can't, money doesn't grow on trees.
Right.
And there was a thing called modern monetary theory. Elizabeth Warren was a big champion of it. Knucklehead.
Idiotic.
And people believed money grew on trees.
Yeah.
And literally 6-8 years ago, people were like, do you really think it works? And serious people were talking about it. And I kept saying, my mother told me money doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah.
Barbara Novogratz, shout out. She's a bright woman. Never went to college, but bright woman. Money doesn't grow on trees.
No.
And our government today thinks it grows on trees. Turkey's government thought it grew on trees. Their currency went to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah.
Look what happened in Nigeria. When you think money grows on trees, you get screwed.
Yeah. And nobody thinks that's the case with the U.S. because it hasn't been. But if you just keep doing it and keep spending, we're going to find out it's different one day.
We become fiscal hawks here.
Let's change the subject.
Okay. Yeah.
Since we're very transparent with our listeners, you know, got something to share. Big thing happened this weekend. Mike Novogratz went to prison. One of the worst prisons. He was in Angola with C Murder.
I did see C Murder.
What was he doing in jail, Mike?
He was in good spirits. He still has celebrity, you know, energy. People, you know, said hi, took pictures, and listen, it was a really interesting.
Did you get locked up or you just went to
I was there visiting. Okay. Galaxy Gives, my philanthropy, does a lot around criminal justice reform. And we took 50 philanthropists and 50 activists down to New Orleans for a 3-day seminar for a thing called One for Justice to really discuss the situation and see what was happening. And, you know, interesting, you talk about politics. New Orleans and all of Louisiana had made a ton of progress and really smart moves over the last 10 years. There was a governor, a West Point grad, Governor John Bel Edwards, who had spearheaded some of this stuff. And you were making a lot of progress. So it was actually, you would have thought, Louisiana is actually becoming a more open-minded and forward-thinking justice system. New governor, he's a Make America Great Again governor. And in 42 days of his administration, he's rolled back 10 years of reforms.
Wow.
And so people are panicked down there, people in the justice system.
What does Angola look like?
Angola is an amazing prison in some ways. It is the size of Manhattan.
No prison that's amazing. Well,
it's just the scope of it. It's the size of Manhattan.
Wow.
That's how big the prison is. It's a plantation/farm. And it was so confusing in some ways. Listen, they have a very nice warden. It's the only prison I've ever been to that they didn't take our phones and they didn't like you go to prison in Sing Sing, you go to visit any of the New York prisons and you literally almost get strip searched to go in, bracelets off, things, rings off. We walked in there with our stuff.
Yeah, but you was also a visitor.
No, but even when you're a visitor,
You go visit Sing Sing.
I meant to say you were a special visitor. So the regular visitors, they don't treat them like that?
I'm telling you, there was a... I'm sure we got treated a little differently.
Yeah.
But it was not near the kind of crazy intensity. Angola's got 4,200 residents, right? Inmates. All of them are there for life.
Wow.
So think about this. You're driving in this 20-mile road through the swamps. It's surrounded by the Mississippi River. You can't get, like, there's nowhere to run. And it's the last 20 miles. You see the last McDonald's. You'll never see a McDonald's again the rest of your life.
Damn.
You are going, and they are mostly young black men. Not all black men, but mostly. Yeah. And now, there's some parts that are wonderful about it. They and this is really controversial, right? They work farming the land. They eat healthier than we eat. I mean, their potatoes, their corn, they don't sell it. It's all farmed for the 4,000 plus the 2,000 guards.
Mm-hmm. So that's a successful piece of that program. Well, I'm saying if you're going to operate a prison.
Yet they get, you know what they get paid? 5 to 20 cents an hour. I was to the warden and I said, you might want to raise that wage a little. Come on, dude. Now, it's interesting that they can't leave. That's like credits at the shops. He did something fascinating on death row. I've never seen anything like it. He opened the cages and said to the guys, you behave and I'll let you first have an hour, then two, and now permanent.
Uh-huh.
We went there. We walked to death row. Normally death row, you feel like you're walking by Hannibal Lecter cages.
Yeah.
We went by death row. I was in a room with 15 guys on death row, hugging them, crying with them, talking to them, hearing their stories. What you don't understand until you visit a prison is that a lot of the people are old. I got to talk to one guy. He had kidnapped a girl for 4 hours, didn't harm her. He'd been there 46 years.
Wow.
I was like, in Germany, that would have been a 3-year sentence.
Yeah.
46 years. I asked the warden, and I ask every warden of every prison I go to, if you needed to let some people out that you knew would be no threat to society today, and so you're going to feel really good that there are no safety danger.
Yeah.
He was like, 900.
Wow. Yeah.
That's one quarter of the prison he could let go. And you meet them. They're all guys, 50, 60, 70. Like, it's insane that they're still staying in prison for something they did 40 years ago.
Any particular lessons from Angola versus other places you've, visited?
So what happened was, on these laws that changed in the last 10 years, a few people, 46 people, 46 have been paroled.
Mm-hmm.
And even with that little hope, people started taking the classes. People want to improve their life and move on. They want to get out of there. And just giving them a little bit of hope seemed to change. And I was only there for 5 hours and didn't talk to everybody, but it certainly seemed to change.
Yeah.
What was hard about is it does feel like you're still in the 1850s. Black guy's on a plantation, white guy's on a horse at some time. We didn't see the horse. I've seen the pictures.
A horse? Yeah.
White guy's on a horse with a gun, and the guys are literally, working in the fields.
Yeah. With all I'm saying is Angola versus other places, like, they do it better, they do it worse. Is there something that you took away from it
Listen, having a prison in the middle of a beautiful part of the world. Now, listen, it wasn't hot. Normally, it's really hot down there in about 2 months.
Yeah.
And so, but it's on a beautiful plantation. You're looking at trees, and I was
the nature
putting
helps.
People in nature, feeding
versus
them more healthy,
Rikers.
Giving them. There were 50 different clubs that cook food, and you can go to a Mexican restaurant. And in some ways, if you're there for your life, they created this whole new ecosystem.
Yeah,
I just can't get with the term beautiful plantation at all.
I agree. That's what I said. That was the
compare it to Rikers.
One of the
I'm just saying the words beautiful plantation sounds crazy.
One of Muhammad Ali's daughters was with us and she's been active in this space. And for her it was the hardest prison visit she'd ever been to.
Why did she say that?
Because, and I should let her speak for herself, but paraphrasing, because the normalization of a beautiful plantation, that feeling of it all felt kind of normal. And she's like, this is no different than Slate. Like, this was like,
let me guess, well, it is.
Yeah, of course. It's different than slavery. It's completely different than slavery because you committed a crime to get in there. That's the concept of prison.
It definitely is different.
Yeah, because there's a consequence.
But you can step back and look at this system that has put 4,000, you know, men in this space. Now, listen, you've committed a bad crime to get there.
Yeah, right.
To be a double life or a triple life. There's some guys in there that have 500-year sentences. I mean, Louisiana gets kind of crazy on the sentences.
It's kind of crazy. What was the point of sentences in my 500 years?
Yeah.
And let me one last question about that. Is Angola private prison, private loan?
No.
Oh, state?
Yeah. It's actually called the Louisiana State Penitentiary. Mm-hmm. I guess the only thing I would say is, and I encourage everybody, visit your local prison or jail. Spend some time with someone in there. It's this idea of proximity.
Yeah.
It really changes the way you think of the system. Yeah. And you got to actually ask questions and be thoughtful. But it's in some ways unbelievable. One of the guys we took, he met a cousin of his, a second cousin. He didn't even know it was a lot. He didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
He knew one of his cousins had been there. He didn't know the guy had a son. And so we're having this reunion of a good friend of mine, and they look just like each other. I was like, it's crazy how many black men from New Orleans and other places in the...
One more thing I want to say about Angola. So you guys probably wouldn't know, but BG, who just got released from Angola, he got paroled. He was doing life. I think he did 15 years. Don't hold me to that. 12 to 15 years. Just came out. He was like one of the first Cash Money hot boys. Shout out to BG. And he recently came out, started rapping again. Everybody's showing him love because he's one of the only guys that got out from Angola, survived it. And he went to do a show, you know, trying to make ends meet. Boozy, I think, invited him to do a show. Claire, it was parole officer, like, you know, because Boozy's a felon, he's a felon. Boom, they violated him. I'm not sure if he's still in jail or what's going to happen, but it's like how unfair that is, right? Like you're not in a criminal setting with plotting to be a criminal. Somebody invites you to a show to put some money in your pocket, and boom, that person has a pass as well, and now you might be going back to jail.
The parole laws in this country are the definition of stupidity.
Yes, for
one out of three people that go to jail this year are going there because they violated a parole.
Yeah, ridiculous.
One guy there, he was back in jail from an illegal U-turn, right? Meek Mill was popping a wheelie. And so Reform Alliance, which I'm part of, has been working really hard to change these rules. Change is slow. It's happening, but it's slow.
Yeah.
But it's crazy, the system.
Yeah.
And especially if you're coming from a bad neighborhood, half the guys have been in jail.
If you're a rapper, half the guys have been in jail. Yeah. So it's like you can't even feed your family.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy.
All right.
Next thing I wanted to know about, Dave, you could tell me about this. So Japan, I was reading something that Japan population is just going and they're losing 100 people an hour.
Yeah.
Is that true?
That's true.
It's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Well, Japan, you know, there's the industrialized world in general has a population demographic crisis going on, right?
Yeah.
Which is they're not replacing enough young people, and a lot of these societies are just getting older. Japan is a prime example. And
Oldest society in the world.
Is it?
Almost 30% of their people are above the age of 65. Only 11% are below the age of 15. So
like Saudi Arabia and Africa, what percent was because they said they're some of the youngest countries in the world, right?
Saudi would have like 3% of its population above 65, maybe 30% under 15.
Wow.
Africa as a whole would have
42%
under 15.
42% of Africa.
We've never seen a place as young as Africa.
And to put into perspective, the U.S. is about 18% above 65, 18% below 15. So there's like a bet, right? To just put it into perspective what it is here. So what does that mean? Well, it's really hard to get growth in a stable economy, and right, all these, you know, very few young people are effectively supporting this really, really aging old society, and so it's a place where Japan just can't generate growth.
All our governments were set up to have a pyramid of growth, right? So Dave's going to retire pretty soon, and he's going to get his Social Security
Never.
Check, right? You know, you start getting Social Security check. Well, who pays for the old people? But young people. We always thought we'll have more. The population will keep growing, and so that's why you can borrow, right? That's why you're taking debt. So all of a sudden, when the population is shrinking, we're going to have less people paying back more debt. So what does that mean? That means all you can do is pay back debt. You can't invest in new schools. You can't invest. It crowds out all the other spending. Or right. You change the rules.
So are they just not having sex? Like, what's happening?
No, nobody understands why. It's not just Japan. It's Japan. It's Korea.
China.
It's Italy. It's Germany. It's China.
U.S.?
It's the U.S., except for immigration. Thank you for finishing all my sentences.
All right, I'll pay the 20. Right.
Every one of the industrialized countries in the world has this same issue. Japan and Korea are just the worst right now, but nobody can explain why.
But if you had
why.
To guess, just like from your,
there's so many guesses.
I'm gonna ask you that,
there's so
right
many,
after Dave.
There's so many guesses out there. Some of it has to do with like women entering the workforce. The incentives for having children many years ago were like you had farmhands. Many of them died in childbirthing years, right? So there was reasons why you wanted to have a lot of kids. And so still in like poorer societies, more agricultural-based societies, that's still happening, right? The woman's not working. It's just a different mentality. But as societies have gotten on the double income kind of road, there's not one of them that hasn't seen this trend. Not one.
What's your guess?
There's a big correlation between economic optimism. If you believe your future is bright, you're willing to have more kids. Quite frankly, in America even, like amongst our rich friends, people are having 3-4 kids, right? Where the average American family is just around about 2.
Is that true?
I don't buy that.
I can trade address.
You could tell me anything you want, but like you're telling me like China doesn't think, like the Chinese
Absolutely
people.
Absolutely not. So in China, you don't get married unless you have an apartment. And you don't have an apartment unless you think you can have some money. And so you're not going to have a kid unless you can
make some money. Like every single industrialized country in the world has this problem. You're going to link that just into whether you think the future is bright. You think they think the future is brighter in like Yemen?
What?
Yemen?
No,
Yemenis
the,
think the future is brighter?
Countries. So like Shanghai, Beijing had the lowest birth rates in the history of the recorded world a few years ago, right? Now Korea is getting worse. That's when their economies are. I can show you.
Wait, wasn't there a law in China that you could only have a certain? What country had a law in China?
That was for a while.
Oh, okay.
But it's really beyond China. It's every single industrialized country. Italy has this. People in Italy are pretty happy. I'm saying people in Italy are pretty happy. Yeah. I think it's more that there's some sort of overall dynamic that's going on that when you're getting on the industrialized double income, right, your income, there's no value to having kids. Let's be real about it, right? There was an economic value to having kids 200 years ago for a variety of other reasons. And now that doesn't really exist. They actually cost money. They may give you emotional value,
right? There's a ton of emotional value.
But I'm saying financial.
So that's what I'm saying. You're financial. I mean, I can show you the stats. Wealthier people are having more kids. I'm not making this up.
Africa's not very wealthy. They're having a ton of kids.
In the developing world. Africa's having a ton of kids. So one of the most interesting things is you first see population decline in countries when they get electricity. Because the moment they get electricity, they get TV, and there's more to do at night than just have sex with your wife or girlfriend.
So we should take all the TVs away.
Well, even here, you're less likely to have sex in the bedroom if there's a TV in your bedroom. That's for sure an American statistic.
I could tell you that's factually not true.
Anyway, let me ask you this, right? We don't know why this is happening, but it does happen. What's the future of Japan like economically? Because it could be our future. It could be Germany's future. It could be Korea's future. What's that look like?
So I don't think it'll be our future. I lived in Japan in 1992 and loved Japan. It's one of my favorite places in the world. I lived there. I worked at an all Japanese place. And people asked me what it was like. I was like, well, you're an anthropologist. You are there. It's unbelievable. You're learning, but you're never really part of the culture. They have a very distinct, very closed culture. Matter of fact, they only would let even wealthy expats stay there 5 years before you had to leave, and then because they would taxes.
Yep.
And so they really valued their Japanese culture. So they will literally probably be less and less relevant and fall off the face of the earth. We have a culture that was always about being revitalized with immigrants. We're having immigrant crises now, a lot of reason when we get into it. But all of us are immigrants.
Yeah.
Our sons are immigrants. And so I actually think the nations that can integrate and bring in immigrants over the next 50 years are the ones that will win.
I agree. So yeah, that's big. It seems like a crisis in Japan, right? No one over there is hitting the light bulb and saying, maybe we should let a lot of immigrants come here and change the culture because we're going to not exist, right? Like, we have this migrant crisis in America, right? I'm sure if they gave, you know, freedom and incentives and so on to go to Japan, people would be in Japan.
They don't want them.
That's what I'm saying. So no one over there is thinking like,
it's also hard to understand. It's hard to understand, but this country was set up on the premise of integrating immigrants into our economy. It is the fundamental basis of this country.
No, I agree.
Right? It's hard to take a civilization of thousands of years old that has always been a closed society and change that mentality. It's almost like it doesn't make sense. They're not set up for it. And so,
but at some point you got to evolve.
I think they're trying to, hard.
I moved from Tokyo, which I love, to Hong Kong. In a week in Hong Kong, I felt like I was part of their society. I got invited out by two of the Taipans, two of these wealthy, you know, guys, because I knew one guy's daughter and one guy had gone to Princeton, and I'm on their junks, and I worked at Goldman, and they were business people. It wasn't, you know, in Japan, I worked for all Japanese people, and I loved them, and we got along well. I never went to one of their houses.
Right.
Never.
Because culturally, it's so different.
They have small houses. They don't
And to even contrast that, right, Hong Kong is a trading port, right? It's British and Chinese. So
until
the mentality,
Dubai, Hong Kong was the most international place other than the U.S.
So the mentality there would have been integrate immigrants, right? Yeah. And you felt that, right? So it seems obvious, but it's not so easy to get that culture to change like that. Hey, I want to shift to a few questions. We can get back to anything if you want. But I know we were doing some of these last week, and they were pretty fun. And so we got some new questions coming in from some of our listeners. But one of them, which I'm going to throw to Mike, is where are you standing on NFTs these days? Tell me a little
That's
bit about
a good
it.
Question.
Right? Because we haven't talked about it in a while. And, you know, it could be about CryptoPunks and art or just NFT at large. Like, what's going on in that market?
I got 43 apes. No, I don't.
What's going on in the market?
Well, so the 2021 NFT craze, right, really was a craze.
Mm-hmm.
We're not seeing that now. You're seeing that in memes,
right?
Dog with hat and other memes. And so that wild speculative energy has shifted.
Can you, by the way, explain the difference, like, even between NFTs and, like, the meme coins? Because even that can be confusing.
Yeah. So NFTs really are digital representations of art. They're digital art.
Or any creative product. Right, song, writing.
There might be a one of one, or one of 10,000, but they're limited in how many they are.
Non-fungible.
And so most of the big drops, CryptoPunks, are 10,000.
Yeah.
Right? And so as the price goes up, you push out, like, okay, at one point, a CryptoPunk's trading for, you know, $200,000, $400,000, or how many ETH that was at the time.
Yeah.
Not that many people can afford it. Right? And so you limit your audience when prices go higher.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There are not that many people that can buy a Picasso. So right now, that market, CryptoPunks have held their value. There are a few of the generative art, right, the AI-created art that have held their value. But a lot of that stuff has gone to zero in that original hype.
Yep.
A meme is a group of people that get together that do something funny that usually Gen Z thinks is hysterical and is just a gambling token.
Yeah.
And some of them become like Doge, have become institutionalized almost.
Yeah.
It's like Doge is not going away.
Yeah.
And
what's the market cap of Doge right now?
Doge is like $20 billion
market
cap. The funny thing about memes and why they're more easily, you know, speculative than NFTs is, you know, because you can buy any fraction of one. And so anybody can buy a little bit of Doge, or anybody can buy a little bit of dog with hat.
Yeah. I want to say something else, which is just to clarify for it, right? So an NFT is a non-fungible token. Every CryptoPunk is different.
Yeah.
A meme coin is a fungible token, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a huge difference right there. Every Dogecoin is the same as every other Dogecoin, right?
Yeah.
You get it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas
yeah,
every
yeah.
CryptoPunk is completely different.
Yeah.
So it's like that's what drives the scarcity, right,
yeah,
of the uniqueness in an NFT in the context of art versus just like a meme coin, which effectively most of those meme coins are literally just like slot machines.
The Nobel Prize that Satoshi deserves for that white paper that sits in my foyer, it maybe deserves two.
Yeah.
One is the macroeconomic idea of creating a hard money.
Yeah.
But that idea was around. He created private property on the internet for the first time.
Right.
We never had private property on the internet. And without private property, there is no capitalism. Without private property, there's no freedom. George Washington, that was George Washington's quote, without private property, there's no freedom.
Yeah.
You know, and we didn't really have private property until with the 1650s.
Yeah.
And that's when the whole capitalist boom started. And so you didn't have private property on the internet, and that's why you had Google and Facebook and these towers of concentrated data.
Yeah.
And the hope of the whole crypto revolution is that this idea of private property spreads and we have these decentralized communities. And so the NFTs, I think, were one of the most important things that showed up in 2021.
Yeah.
They're by no means dead. They just don't have the speculative frenzy.
Yeah, but I think that's a super, super important point you just made, which is that it's creating private property in the digital space, right? Before that, everything is just infinitely distributable. There's no scarcity to it. Nobody knows who owns it effectively, right? And here you're getting this blockchain, right? A distributed ledger stored in many places that gives you transparency and you can really see the creation.
You know what was really fascinating? So I did a TED Talk a couple years ago on crypto and I talked about some of this stuff. And the next day, the president of Instagram, who was a very good speaker, he gave a TED Talk about how Web3 was going to influence Instagram. And he literally said on stage, you can find the TED Talk, "We're going to allow creators to take their communities from our platform to others." And I was like, did he just say that? Facebook is going to go to their whole business model. My hair was on fire. I swear he said it. I heard it. It was there.
Does he still work there?
I don't think he still works there.
For sure not.
Or if he does, they shut him up. They backpedaled on that. Like, he said it in front of the whole TED community.
Yeah.
And TED Talks this weekend. Shout out to my brother-in-law. That's such a radical idea. Why these guys have so much power is you develop 400,000 followers and they can change the price for you. They own you.
Talking about that, let's talk about the power of AI, or the not so much power of AI. So I don't know if you guys heard about this. There's this open letter that JBJ, Nicki, Billie Eilish, and a ton of other artists asked for AI to cool down and just kind of take it easy, or for some sort of law to be passed to help cool down AI from, stealing their sound, likeness that's happening. Perfect example, Drake put out a diss record this weekend, and people was so unsure if it was AI or not. So you can't even tell the difference at times. And me personally.
You called Drake and asked him?
I spoke to him the same time the weekend.
When you were hanging out with Buffy.
Yeah. Bro, what is wrong with this guy? Stop putting me in this shit.
All right.
No Diddy.
What happened there was they asked to clarify that to have that their copyrighted song material should not be used as the source, the data pool for how AI generates music, right? That's what they asked for.
I agree with that 100%.
And what's going on with AI too, and I know there's some stuff going on in Congress, Adam Schiff's proposing something, but it's really, there's a big debate around should the source code be open? In other words, the algorithm of how AI uses, and B, what the data set is that they're scrubbing, right? And that's what they're trying to go after.
So
right,
I just want to add to what you're saying real quick. For people that don't know how AI really works, and correct me if I'm wrong, AI sources information, sound, whatever it is, from original stuff, right? And that's how it gets smarter and smarter. So
that,
it
doesn't know if it's original or not original, right?
Yeah, it crawls the web.
But it feels like, I mean, for it to be accurate, it has to, at some point, to replicate Drake. It has to go to Drake.
Yes.
Steal a ton of Drake shit. Not steal it, but
listen to Drake.
Yes. And then replicate Drake. And they're asking for it not to be able to pull from
copyrighted material, right? They're basically asking for it to be, if it's a copyrighted material, that's eliminated from what the AI is allowed to put in their data set when they're constructing this, right? That's one thing. The second side of that is there's a big motion where people are questioning, should we have insight into the source code, right? How it's processing, you know, like things about biases, human biases. If you don't know what the algorithm is running, right, how the code is looking or sorting or weighing information, you don't have a lot of transparency into what its decisions are. And then the second piece of that is, what data is it crawling? And should they be disclosing, we use this data pool, we scoured all of YouTube, we did this, that, and the other thing. So there's kind of two questions going on there at once. Yeah.
And the third piece of this is more philosophical, right? I was telling Dave, I went out to the Koch brothers, one of their annual gatherings, mostly to see how, you know.
Like are you in the Illuminati? Because they said the Koch brothers is in the Illuminati.
Well, just I would typically not be going to such conservative groups, but I like Chase Koch. I like his dad. I like the guy who runs their philanthropy. And I wanted to understand the psychology. And one of the things that was really clear to me is they really believe I don't think from malicious intent that less regulation makes our economy more creative, more buoyant, and more successful. And if you look at the internet where we didn't really regulate it, we became the dominant player in the world in the internet. If you look at crypto where we're trying, we haven't put any good regulation, but we're trying to regulate by the court system.
Idiocy.
And we're falling behind. A lot of people are moving their businesses overseas. It's driving me crazy. AI is a bigger decision, and it's really hard. Do you let AI grow and not regulate it for a while until it actually starts taking their jobs or taking their music? Right now it's the fear of it.
Yeah.
Do you see what it happens? Or do you put guardrails around it now?
Right.
And it's a fierce debate.
It's a fierce debate. It's a fierce debate. I was also going to say that I think the biggest existential crisis around this is that the big tech has got Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, and Meta have gotten so powerful, right, that if there's with the open, I'm kind of in favor of like open sourcing the algorithm and the data, because I don't think that's necessarily regulating, but it is saying, like, look, you got to show us what's going on here, because I think there's a real trend that big data is and big tech is undermining democracy on some levels by getting manipulated with its news flows, right? And we can't see what's going on.
We talked about the TikTok thing last week.
That's right. We talked about TikTok last week. And it's also got a problem with like small tech. Like small tech can't get started. And I'll give you another example that I just saw recently, which is there was an article in the Wall Street Journal. Amazon bought Whole Foods, right? Now they want to take, what's that?
I saw this, yeah.
Right. They want to take on Trader Joe's, right? Because Trader Joe's has this loyal following. Amazon's
they want to
huge,
buy Trader Joe's.
No,
as well.
They want to basically knock it off and recreate it. And so what they did is they hired managers from Trader Joe's, and they were like, what's your best-selling stuff? What are your margins? Pop, pop, pop. Had a secret Trader Joe's room within the Amazon Seattle headquarters, allegedly. This was in the Wall Street Journal. And it's like, at what point do we just say, look, enough. You can't be like taking every single, they already do 50% of online business is done, of all transactions are done by Amazon. They control the cloud, right? A lot more stuff. So when you look at big tech, if you're not going to look at opening up some of these systems in a sense, I think we're going to have a continuing problem where they're going to consolidate power.
Dave Barry and Teddy Roosevelt, man.
Doesn't that put you in a box like what happened with Bill Gates for a little bit, like being sued for a monopoly?
Yes.
The government shuts
you
down.
Well, the government's going after Apple
now.
You know,
yep. And Amazon.
30% on these apps.
Yeah. And Amazon.
That shit is bullshit. I don't
We should sue them.
What?
Why?
Yeah, because they got a monopoly. They can charge anything they want.
Yeah.
Monopoly power isn't good.
Yeah.
I'm not saying.
It's good if you own it.
I'm
it's not good for society.
No. The only thing I'm saying is they just created a dope phone. We are choosing to use this phone, right?
By de facto, there's a monopoly.
Yeah.
If you're a company, there's nowhere else you can sell your stuff.
Yeah. You can't be Uber and not be on the iPhone. You cannot be Airbnb and not be on the iPhone.
Can you not be on Android?
You could be on Android.
That's what I'm saying.
But you're not going to be successful. There's
only two phones.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Whose fault is that?
That's a duopoly.
They just literally made a cool phone.
Yeah, but
they're not forcing us to buy it.
Well, again, I could say the same thing when Standard Oil controlled all the oil and said, okay, I'm going to charge you. You need oil or you're going to freeze to death.
Yeah, but that's different.
No, why is it different?
Because there's other phones. They just bought all the oil.
No. You can't make an argument. Listen, you can't really exist in this world if you're not on an Apple or Samsung phone, right? So let's say there's even two, but that's even incredible market dominance. There's not five or six or eight of these things that compete on price. So those guys basically collude. They say 30% for apps. So every single company that wants to be an online direct-to-consumer company has to go through these guys and pay 30% of their revenues. 30, not three. That's a crazy number.
It should be three.
Yeah. And so I think, like, there has to be a limit on, again, Amazon. I think they're getting sued as well by the Trade Commission or whatever. But, you know, 50% of online, you know, they front run a lot of data because they own the cloud as well. So there's a lot of disturbing trends in big tech that we have to pay attention to.
When these guys started off, Google's, I don't think it's their company motto anymore, but it was do no evil. That was their company motto.
Right.
And all of these big companies have morphed into what we read about in the bad sci-fi novels.
Yeah. Well, it's just very hard for anybody to get any power outside that system, whether you're a creator, a small tech entrepreneur, the consumer, right? Nobody really has power.
Crypto was this, the idea of crypto was to say, middle finger and try to disintermediate that power. And so we have these monopolies. They're hard to, they want to preserve their power. Listen, if we had our own, we'd probably be doing the same thing. So I'm not saying they're immoral. I'm not saying but that's the system. And so governments traditionally, Teddy Roosevelt most famously, said at one point it's not good for our society. And we can make rules to decide what's good for our society. We never thought having six-year-olds tie little carpet knots was good for society. We said there's no child labor.
Right.
Right. If you're a free market, pure capitalism, like you do what you want with your kid.
Yeah.
Right. No. So governments, that's why we get together as governments, are allowed to set rules on what we think is good for society. And I fundamentally think 30% ain't good for society.
Yeah. But what's up with your boy Jamie Dimon always shitting on Bitcoin and Chase has a ton of Bitcoin?
Listen, if there are plenty of futures where decentralized apps would cost banks a ton of money.
Yeah.
Something as simple as if I took a money market fund, which BlackRock's trying to do right now, mm-hmm. only put treasury bills in it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just treasury bills, full faith and credit of the government, and made that a payment coin. So you could have it in your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of carrying $100 in your pocket to get no interest, right? Now you're carrying it or using Apple Pay and you're paying, right? Now you've got in your phone all your bank account. Earning 5% or 5.5%, right? Why would you leave any money in a bank that earns zero? JP Morgan pays you 0% on your deposits.
Yeah, yeah,
zero.
Yeah.
Or one basis point. Right?
Yeah.
I get 5% and I got better credit than JP Morgan. Why would you ever leave your money in a regional bank?
Right.
And so the whole banking system, the Fed won't let it happen because the whole banking system. The Fed has $2 trillion. There's $2 trillion of cash bills out there, right? You probably have a couple $100 in your pocket, earning zero. So the Fed and the government makes all that without paying interest on it.
Yeah. Yeah, think about that. Every $100 that sits in your pocket, basically,
it's $5 a year.
You're not getting interest on that. The Fed's not paying, essentially like free float.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
You know, because if you put that in the bank or in a money market account for that matter,
$2 trillion cash, 5% is $100 billion.
But when you just have a bunch of $100 billion
a year, the government makes for free just because we use cash.
Yeah.
So, that's insane. Yeah.
So if you tokenize that whole thing, well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of problems to it because banks get collapse. Good for the consumer, bad for the banks. But then you got to figure out how to get credit lending because banks lend. So I mean, these are complicated systems.
So let's wrap up.
JP Morgan buys a lot just to.
JP Morgan has their own blockchain. They understand this is the future.
Let's wrap up. That's a complicated
topic
for another time, I think, right? But I think we covered some good stuff today.
We're over our time of the wolf pack is just. We've
going
gone
on
too
and
long.
On. God.
Jesus. Damn it, Mel.
Mel just keeps asking questions.
All right, guys.
So wait, who's closing it out? Mel?
You close it out.
No, you close
it out. I open it. Mike, close it out.
Guys, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor. Mel, you got to know the sponsor.
JM Bullion.
You didn't give out any gold today.
JM Bullion. Listen, they were smart enough to call us. They believed in the macro call. You know, now people are buying gold at Costco. Gold is going to continue to be a good asset to own. Call JM Bullion and buy your gold because they're our only sponsor and we love them. Follow us, send questions, Instagram, Spotify. We're on all the channels. Love you guys.
I saw you on Davido's page randomly.
I was sitting next to him at the Knicks game and I was like, he's got great chains. And I said, you know, I like to borrow people's chains. And he laughed about that whole thing. I didn't know who he was. And I saw his name and I Googled him. He's a Nigerian pop star.
Let's go to Nigeria.
Oh, he's invited me. We're buddies now. And I posted a picture and then he posted it on his thing. And I didn't realize he had 29 million followers. And so it's my most liked photo I've ever
had.
I'm really happy. I was like, who are all these people that like me? And I was like, oh, they're his friends, not mine. I usually have about 7 people that like it.
Shout out to DeVito. DeVito.
He's got
podcast.
A concert on Wednesday night at Madison Square Garden.
Right. Shout out.
All right. Shout out. Be well. Enjoy.